You're listening to The Common Cause with Phil Lyman and Mike Peterson.
Hello.
Hello, Phil. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. You're there. How's it going?
It's good. Are you glad to know you're, other than my family, you're the only person on my speed dial list. You know that?
I feel very honored by that.
Oh, man. Or very tired, I'm sure.
No, I love talking to you. We've covered a lot of ground in a few short months.
We have. Hey, I want to get going on this because I got a lot of stuff, and I know you got some stuff you want to talk about, and I know there's some things that I think our listeners are going to be interested.
Okay, let's get down to it.
Can we start on SB 195? How'd you feel about that?
You want to go right to the jugular, huh?
I know. SB 195, that's the one that was Senator Vickers and Val Peterson, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Dealing with emergency powers and how those are administered and everything else. So
we had to tell folks straight out of the gate that we didn't vote the same on this bill.
And the strange thing is that I'm the one that voted no, and you're the guy that is known for the no vote, and you voted yes. So I guess we have some explaining to do.
We do have some explaining to do. I know I have some explaining to do with my own wife even about why I did what I did. Okay.
Well, it's one of those hard bills because it's dealing like so many of these things. You get into the underlying section that you're amending. And what you ought to do is throw the whole section out and start fresh. But we don't do that. We take little steps. And sometimes that is, I don't know, it's hard to measure the progress on that. And sometimes we're making negative progress.
So SB 195, and I should pull it up. Do you know by chance, Phil, about how long that bill is? How many pages was it? Do you remember?
I think it was 1,700 lines. I've got it up here in front of me, but I'm looking at the amendment.
Yeah, okay. So 1,700 lines. That's a lot of lines. That's a lot of bill.
Oh, it's much longer than that.
So what's interesting is we're only going to address a few lines of it. I mean, I just pulled it up, and I've got an app that I don't know if you use the same one or it's a Google extension that highlights every change.
Yeah, with the red and yellow.
Yeah,
that's Connor Boyack's extension. Shout out to Connor, and yeah, it's really useful. And yeah, I do use that the Google extension.
There are sections where there's a whole lot of just plain white.
Yeah.
And then there's 1,855. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then there's some others that have quite a few changes to them.
So it was, and it had what? It's got like 20-25 co-sponsors. But anyway, yeah, I think what you're saying is an interesting point that I think it's important for everyone to understand. This is called Emergency Response Amendments. So there's already a bill. There was already a law. And so what they did is they've gone in and amended it, made some changes to the existing code.
Right.
And I think the existing code was written. Do you know when it was written originally, Phil?
I was looking at some of the amendments. A lot of it was 2006, amended 2006. Yeah. And if you go back piece by piece, and when you do an amendment like this, you're affecting, you know, many sections of code. What do they got on here? There's probably, looks like maybe 20 or 25 sections of code that are affected by this. So then you'd have to go back to each one of those and see. Yep. I'm looking at some that are 1953.
Yep.
So yeah, it looks like probably got the Health Act in 1953, and then everything else has been a remodel of that.
Yeah, lines 67 through 95, so 28 lines or so are new, are affecting other other sections of code. That's a lot of ripple effect. It's all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's three basic sections that get the 26.6 and then the 26A, and then you get down into the 53, which is the health, Utah's health code.
Mm-hmm.
So
what are the things that you liked about this?
I guess one thing that I thought was a gesture in the right direction was that a health emergency would expire in 30 days unless the legislature wanted to take action to extend it, rather than the reverse of that, which was if we wanted to end a health order, we had to mm-hmm. take action to end it in 30 days. However, it would end automatically. I believe it was in 60 days.
Yeah.
Unless it was extended. And so we dropped that down to 30 days. I guess you could say that was a positive move and maybe change the inertia from, you know, letting it go on to basically it's going to end unless somebody takes some action to keep it alive.
I would agree. That's one of the few things. That's probably the main reason I did support it, because it did move us a little closer to the goal. But you said something when we were talking earlier, Phil, you and I offline about I can't remember exactly how you said it, but we could have done so much more.
Yeah.
And we ended up, describe that. Talk about that.
I
think it's a good thing.
When people now go look at these sections, it'll say these sections were amended in 2001 or 2021. And that's going to be basically, we own that section now, even though we just made a few little tweaks and amendments, that is now our section of code. And then you go down and you say, oh, we can fine healthy people $125 or $150 a week for not wearing a mask. We can fine businesses who have no reason to believe that they're a risk to anybody. We can fine them $5,000 for not mandating masks. We can, you know, so all of those things that we've all hated, we changed the momentum a little bit, but we own this section of code now, and it's still got some really ugly provisions in it. And the thing that I really disliked, and I'm probably a little bit more invested because I had, you know, gone to the work of putting in a fourth substitute, and my fourth substitute was to put some political accountability in this, which says, you know, if you're going to make a order that negatively affects people or businesses, you should be politically accountable. And instead of the health department doing it, it should be the governor, or instead of the local health department, it should be the county commissioners, so that you can, you know, the people can vote them out the next time they come around, or, you know, at least put some pressure on them. And instead, we actually went the other direction on that and gave the health departments more autonomy and the executives less responsibility for those decisions, which I think it's bad policy.
And so what happened to your amendment?
It got voted down on the floor with a voice vote, and I was wishing that someone would ask for division so I could actually see. And then afterwards, I had so many people coming and saying, "Hey, you know that I was going to ask for division, but the speaker was moving so fast," and he was moving really fast, and
it went so fast that I was still so new to the processes, and it wasn't until it passed that I thought. We got to do division, but it was right. We'd already moved along.
Well, and see, I'm standing there with my speaker. I can say division just as easy, but I was kind of waiting to see if some of the other people in the chamber were going to say division, because it's a little bit more,
It would have been. What we got to do, though, is what a division means is Phil stands up and he describes his amendment. And the Speaker of the House, Speaker Wilson, said, "We'll do a voice vote to see if this amendment's going to be accepted." And so we did a voice vote, and the yeas. There wasn't very many yeas. And there was more nays. So he said, the nays win, and it doesn't pass.
No, and I think there was actually 40 people that said yay, and then the other 35 shouted. People yelled no. So
that could be. that's probably what it was.
And so the speaker makes a call, and and that stands unless somebody says
division.
Yeah.
How many people need to stand up?
Five.
Five people need to stand up, and if five people stand up, then we take a vote, an electronic vote, and so your name is up on the board that shows your name, yay or nay, on voting for, in this case, this amendment, which would have been, I wish we would have done, because then we would have known who was supportive of this idea of holding the chief executive accountable for the decisions that are made in health orders.
Yeah, and it does change people's mm-hmm. position on that. Sometimes if they're doing an actual vote where they have to push their button, they might give it a little bit more thought. And typically on a voice vote, really, you know, half the people even respond, the other half are just like, yeah, whatever. And so you don't know really unless you call division. And this is one of those, no vast criticism of the speaker, but it's one of those. It's like I rule that motion fails. Back to you, you know. Instead of I rule that motion fails, give it a second. A
pause. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was no pause. It was back to you and on to summation. And it's like, by that point
in the session, we were moving pretty rapidly.
Except when we were moving really, really slowly. Right? I mean,
that's true. There were times we were moving pretty slowly and folks were just trying to fill time. And
you go for 20 minutes killing time, and then all of a sudden it's like, move it, move it, move it. It's like, let's just give these bills the hearing that they deserve and the time that they deserve. And I guess, you know, that's another lesson that I hopefully learn a little bit more each time, which is that, you know, if you want to be heard, you simply have to.
You have to speak say up. Something. Huh?
You have to say something. Yeah, people aren't going to come and say, "Hey, what do you think about this?" You know, it's like, no, you got to push your button. You got to stand up. And sometimes you feel like you're inconveniencing 75 other people in the room. And sometimes you are. You know, sometimes that's the last thing they want is to spend one more second talking about this and
something that's uncomfortable and makes them have to really take a stand on something.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But okay. No, I have to say, Mike, I was just so proud of you the whole session with the no votes. I mentioned I was talking to Commissioner Bushman tonight, and he pointed out, you know, he's looking down through the votes. He's like, man, that Mike Peterson, he's bold for a freshman. He's out there voting no on a lot of things. And people don't realize that that's not always a comfortable vote, especially when you're the only red one up on the board. And you did that on quite a few. And I was very proud of you, too. I think it's a great distinction.
Well, I appreciate that. You know what? I told the folks here in Cache County when I left, I was gonna stand for the Constitution and our party platform the best I understood them, and so, you know, that's what I tried to do, was vote for smaller government, less expenditures. And yeah, it was funny because a couple of days before the end of the session, my intern pulled me aside. She said, "Hey, one of my friends, another intern, just told me you vote no more than anybody else in the legislature. Did you know that?" Well, I didn't know that for sure, but doesn't surprise me. It's certainly not what I was going for, but
no, I think it's well, over on my side, and of course I'm sitting on the other side of the room from you, and it's they're saying, "Well, let's get Mikey. He hates everything." So
in fact, Representative Schultz, he's called me Mikey for the last half of the session. I pulled him aside and I said, "Hey," and I was so much serious with him. I said, "Are you calling me Mikey because I don't like anything? Because I vote against everything?" Because I didn't know if he was making fun of me. For playing, somebody else told me they were going to start calling me Dr. No.
Dr. No, yeah.
That's what they call Rand Paul.
Oh, but, yeah. See, that's not bad company.
Yeah.
No.
Anyway.
It's it takes more courage to vote no, and especially when everyone else is voting yes. And so,
boy, it's a strange thing. I mean, we're sitting in our social services appropriations, right? And it was a voice vote. There's like 20, you know, 20 people on the committee because it's senators and House, and it's a voice vote by name. And so they call a name. Yes. 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 Over and over. Then Mike Peterson. No, you know, it's, you're right. It's a tough thing. It's a little intimidating, a little, it's actually kind of exhausting, but
it can be, yeah.
It was still, it was a great experience. It was, yeah, I don't regret. I have a couple of votes I regret that I wasn't quite ready to make the decision, and I had to go a little quicker than I had hoped. But
you know, overall, just at the end of last year, a guy named Sheldon Adelson, he's a billionaire casino owner down in Vegas. I don't know if you ever followed him. He was a huge Republican supporter, but I just came across one of his quotes. A friend of mine shared it with me, but he was saying, you know, the Republicans always just like fall apart when they lose an election. It's the end of the world, he said. But what I've learned is sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and there's always another hand to be dealt. And that's with the legislature. It's amazing. It's like, okay, well, if we got this wrong on a bill, there's a good chance we're going to get a chance to play that hand again really soon, usually before the next session during the interim, and hopefully people maybe know a little bit more about it. So
yeah, and this may even be one. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if anybody's working on this, but
I think it's definitely got tons and tons of work to do on it. The other amendment that I had took out the entire section of penalizing individuals, yeah, $150 a week for not wearing a mask. It's like, and this was the thing. It's like, okay, the health department can affect people by force if they pose a direct health threat. And what we've said is, well, whether they oppose a direct health threat or not, that the health department can force them to do things. And that's, boy, that's, if you want to talk about blatantly unconstitutional, mm-hmm, whether mm-hmm that was in there before or not, it's like, if we didn't fix it, we should fix that.
We should have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we should fix it now. So,
well, the thing is that, you know, with the mask, you can always wear a mask. You can wear a mask anytime you want.
But can, right? Can you still choose to wash your hands? That's the question.
So.
Yeah, it is. It's. Everyone agrees that we're kind of living in this twilight zone world with the masks, and I know it's really important to some people, but it's just got such a stigma to it. And I hope that we can get down and talk about the actual underlying circumstances rather than the symbolism and the emblems, you know, that we have made so important in this discussion.
But
very interesting from a policy standpoint. It's just, I mean, just it's just so interesting, really fascinating.
Well, as a newcomer and anxious to see a big change, I have to say I was disappointed in this one, because I was really hoping to just really go to town on restricting,
right,
and putting the balance back in. And it didn't do it. And again, as a new person to the process, and not, you know, that take, I don't, I there were things I didn't know I could do or I should have done, like stand up to shout division, mm-hmm, I could have written an amendment, because there was little pieces that, you know, we could just clean up a couple of lines here and there. That would have, you know, made some changes, but like you said, another hand will be dealt.
Right, and you learn something. It's like one thing that has been really frustrating to me is that we save these most important bills to the last moment, when I think they should be the first ones out of the gate, so that we can, you know, work on them and address them and talk about them. And
yeah, this has been a 195 and been worked on for a long time, because we saw an early draft of it, you know, months ago.
Yeah, yeah, and you say, well, you, a couple of weeks before the end of the session, I had mentioned to some of the group that I'm going to be. There's no way I'm leaving here without addressing this mask issue, and it's like, oh, no, we've got this. You know, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do this, and so you're kind of like, all right, well, let's see, and then it's like, it just comes out with a kind of a dud instead of them. Yeah. So
48 hours before the end of the session, and it's like,
yeah,
there's not much time to address the issues with this.
I will say, and I know you feel the same way. If there's any of our colleagues that are listening, I have such respect for them. And so, you know, I know that they are intelligent people doing really, really difficult things. And so I don't ever want to come across as like denigrating the hard work of the people that do these things. But at the same time, it should be an open forum where it's like, hey, if I've got something to say, then I can be heard and you can be heard and we can hash it out and talk about it until we get to a consensus. And I didn't feel like HB 195, even though it had overwhelming yes votes, I don't feel like it was a consensus. It was like an agreed upon something. So anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was we got to do something, and this is better than nothing. And well, let's just do this then. And...
Yeah. 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 It missed the mark for me.
Yeah, and me too. And I know for a lot of voters around here, I know we're a little disappointed. So anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
we've used a good chunk of time just talking about that one. You want to talk about something else? PPP loans?
Yeah.
294?
Let's talk about PPP. Is that all right?
Yeah, yeah. When I say 294, that's HB 294. It was kind of in the same flavor as 195, so we can let 195 kind of cover that.
So the PPP, that's the Payroll Protection Plan, and I can't remember how many weeks ago, but several weeks ago, it was announced that the state had determined that the PPP loans which were forgiven. We're going to be taxed.
Right.
And I was initially right out the gate, I was a little uncomfortable for two reasons. One is because first and foremost, because every time I hear new tax, it's like, oh, no, this is not good. I don't like new taxes. And second, because it just as I recalled, I could remember in my mind some discussion about that these weren't supposed to be taxed. So I had this little dilemma going on in my mind. And so, I don't know, do you want me to tell my story?
Yeah.
I was a little perplexed by this PPP, the plan of the state to tax the payroll protection plan money. My company got a small PPP loan, and I'm so grateful because it actually did help us through a really difficult, struggling time. But I know that there's lots of folks who weren't able to acquire a PPP loan. But once I heard what they were going to be taxed, I decided I needed to go and figure out better what was going on with those. Well, about the same time, I started getting emails from tons and tons of constituents as well, individuals as well as CPA firms like yours,
mm-hmm.
asking what the plan was. So over the President's weekend, I spent quite a bit of time and I put together a lot of thoughts. I went through and looked at what did Congress say? They're the ones that wrote the checks for this. What did they say? Well, it was clear that they said the PPP loans were not supposed to be taxed. They wanted money to go out into the economy. They wanted, they didn't want to restrict any of it. They didn't want to pull any of it back. They didn't want the states. They didn't want it to be taxed at all. But once they said that, within just a few days, the IRS said, not so fast, we are going to tax it. Took a few more weeks. The Congress once again rebuked Actually, they sent a pretty scathing letter to the IRS and said, no, you've missed the mark. We don't want this taxed. Well, around the same time, well, in August, so 2 or 3 months later, in August, the state of Utah passed, what was it? It was SB 6005, I think.
6005, I believe it was.
Yeah. Which was the state's decision as to what they were going to do with the tax. And actually, in the law, it says that they were going to tax these PPP revenues. But it was interesting because in the debates that happened on the House floor, both in the Senate and in the House of Representatives, it was clear that they were not going to be taxed.
That was the narrative. Yeah.
That was the narrative. That's what was the discussion. This is a great bill because it's a bill that clarifies for everybody that PPP loans won't be taxed.
So then what'd you do?
Then I started talking to people who were pretty quick to tell me that I didn't know what I was talking about. And so I'd put together a 5 or 6 page document telling the history of the PPP program and what had happened, you know, both federally and in the state. And then I started getting some people to say, oh, maybe we got to rethink this. This doesn't seem quite, it seems like it needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe we got to back up, Phil. Maybe you could describe what the PPP, what the taxation issue is with this.
Well, I can tell you that the experience as a CPA working on these things is that, yeah, Congress came out and said, we're doing this, it's not taxable. IRS came out and said, that's true, but the expenses that you use to pay are not deductible. It's like, oh, that means that's taxable. But you just say, whatever, okay, you got $30,000 PPP loan and you got to pay taxes on it. And that was what most the banks were loaning with that understanding. And so that was about the time that Utah came out. And I went to the meeting. You weren't on the legislature then, but I went to the meeting and they said, you know, we just want to make sure everyone understands these PPP loans are not taxable in Utah. And I thought, well, that's odd since they're taxable by the IRS, even though Congress has said they're not and IRS says they are. It's like, it's such a moving target. Plus, it's so ridiculous that the federal government's borrowing $2 trillion to give everybody, mm-hmm. you know, a pocket full of money or to help these businesses. I mean, I also appreciated the PPP loans and it saved a number of my clients and it's, you know, but it's been such a moving target. So anyway, then we get to the January when Congress comes out and says, you know, under no circumstances are these PPP loans taxable, nor is the forgiveness of the loan taxable. It becomes a grant. Mm-hmm. And at that point, then I'm like, oh, well, that's interesting. But then it becomes more clear that, oh, Utah is planning to tax the forgiveness. And so then we're back to like, this is crazy. We're now decoupled. And from a tax preparer standpoint, you're saying this is awkward. It's hard to do this. It's hard to make this work. If I have a net operating loss on my federal, I won't have a net operating loss on my state. Could go on for 15 years that way. So there's lots of reasons mechanically that's like, from my standpoint, it didn't work. Whether it's taxable or not, I just wanted Utah to say, we've decided to tax it. And they didn't. What they said is, it's not fair. It's not fair that this guy gets money and that guy didn't. And so what's the solution? Hey, send Utah $200 million and that will make everything fair. Everybody's happy now. Because, yep. And it's like, that's adding insult to injury to say, now you get to send $200 million more to the state. So anyway, but you were the one that was willing to like push and push and push. And now we've got this, other stimulus money that's coming around. I think you may be the PPP champion.
I don't know. I've been talking the last few days with several in the House leadership and other reps and trying to push the idea that, yeah, you know, you thought we had a $1.5 billion surplus and now we're going to get another $1.5 billion or more. I have a hard time seeing why we need to tax these PPP loans. I don't know why, you know, I mean, we got $3 billion. Of course, $1.5 billion that we already spent. We did spend it, but Why I don't understand why we need to be so rabid about getting this 200 whatever million dollars from this PPP loan, because like you said, taxing it's not going to make it any more fair. And I know people say, well, it's not fair because some people got it, some people didn't. Well, it's still taxing. It still doesn't make that go away either. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the whole bailout thing. I'm not a fan of this whole PPP thing, but it is what it is. And for the state to step in and tax it doesn't make it smell any less.
So if the state doesn't tax it, and you've got a PPP loan in your business, mm-hmm. so you come out, say you've got an extra $2,500 because the state doesn't tax it. Yeah. What would you do with the $2,500?
I'll pay my employee for another month.
Exactly. What would the state do with that $2,500? They'd probably, you know, build another building up at the University of Utah, or, you know, some other expansion. Well, all good things, I'm sure. But government is big enough, and business is strapped enough. It's like, let this money stay in the private sector. Let it do its thing in the private sector. It'll do more good there. It just will.
Well, and one of the things that I keep hearing is that, you only get taxed. You only have to pay tax if you were profitable. But if I understand it right, it catches up with you. I mean,
yeah, all you have to do is do a multiple year combination to see, I am paying tax on this, whether I pay it in this year or next year or the year after that. I'm paying tax on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm paying tax at the state level, and I'm not paying tax at the federal level. And those net operating losses carry forward. It's taxable income at the state level. Whereas the IRS has just said, no, it's not taxable. It doesn't matter if you've got a loss or a profit. You don't have to worry about, you know, having to pay tax on that forgiveness, which was the intent. You hit the nail on the head from the very beginning. That was the intent. There's been lots of maneuvering and not disingenuous maneuvering. There's just been it's been a dance, and it's bad policy based on bad policy based on bad policy that gets us to these places sometimes. But no, I'm really proud of you. I'm going to get you a big belt buckle that says PPP champion. even if this doesn't go through, I'm going to get you that belt buckle.
Yeah. It'll be a lot more fun if it does. If we can move the needle a little bit on this and save taxpayers 200. I think it's closer to $250 million this year.
Is it
that it would save folks? Yeah, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of tax money.
Yeah, I can't believe how fast a half hour goes when we start talking about this stuff. But I really wanted to bring up one more thing, and that's this idea of evaluating people based on their votes. This is not a vote. This is an action. This is like a motion, an effort. And I think it's at least as important as, you know, any of the most important bills that we voted on. So good job. Kudos to that.
Well, that's awfully nice of you. You've been a great mentor for me.
I've been really giving you lots of adulation tonight too, and that's not my standard thing. Don't let it go to your head.
No, don't worry. I'll go downstairs. Sally will deflate me.
That's one of Jody's favorite quotes. Is adulation is poison. You know, that's President Hinckley's quote. So
yep. Don't inhale.
Yep.
Well, all right. I would say this about the PPP. If you have questions or concerns, do reach out to your elected folks. I think it's really important that the representatives and senators and others hear how we feel about this stuff, because there's still room and time to make changes. But the only way it happens is if our voices are heard. So,
you know, another thing too, again, from my CPA side of it, the people that, I know there's probably lots of abuse on the PPP loan. Some people that applied that maybe didn't need it as much, but overall, most of the people that I saw that I worked with that we got PPP loans for them, they really, really needed it, which means those are the same people that probably could really use a tax break at this point. It is going to the right people, and probably not to all the right people, and maybe to some of the wrong people, but overall, these are businesses that can put this money to really good use.
And it might be, Phil, that it might be that the dollars, more dollars went to big companies that didn't need it. My guess is there's a ton of small companies who took out small loans, and this is very, it was very important for them being able to maintain their business.
Plus, most people, when they were borrowing the money, they really didn't know what it was going to take to have it forgiven. They were thinking they were going to have to pay it back. They were conservative on it. Again, some of them that maybe were more in the know really exploited it for everything it was worth. But I think maybe not 90% of the money, but 90% of the recipients did this in really good faith.
So, well, okay. That enough for tonight.
One to watch for sure. Yeah. Yeah. This is great. Great discussion. Thanks.
Well, thank you. And again, I appreciate all the help you gave me during this session and even since all the phone calls we've been able to have, all your questions. Because I'm sincere when I tell you, I got seven numbers in my speed dial, and there's only one that's not family. So,
well, I had somebody today say, "How do you find time for the legislature?" And I said, "That's not my problem. It's finding time for my work is the problem because it's pretty compelling. You get into legislative stuff, and
there's always something to do, huh?"
It's pretty compelling and it's important. And anyway, it's good being up there with you and having that experience together. In fact, I was telling somebody today about our history, and they said, "How amazing is that? That you're both up there at the it was Commissioner Bushman." He said, "How amazing is that?" And that's what I think all the time. Who would have ever thought?
We certainly would never. 35 years ago. Nope. Well,
no, okay. We were going to be cowboys, so. That didn't work out.
Let's talk with Scott too about that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks, Mike.
Tell Jody I said hi.
Okay. Same to Sally. All right.
Okay. See thanks. Ya. Have a good night. Bye bye.
You too. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Common Cause with Phil and Mike. You can email your comments and questions to thecommoncausepodcast@gmail.com. We hope you'll subscribe and that you'll give us a 5-star review.